listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to State of the Arts. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And it's so nice to have you back with us again. And, Paul, we should thank our presenting
sponsor. We should thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. Breakdown Services is the industry standard, entertainment industry standard, I should say, used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And as always, to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
And our thanks also, Paul, go out to performingartslive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California.
Our guests today are both accomplished Broadway stars in their own right, but they're sharing the stage currently in the Pasadena Playhouse's production of the new musical Dangerous Beauty, directed by Tony Award nominee Cheryl Collar. I hope I got that right. Cheryl, I apologize if I did not, but our guests will point that out shortly. Please welcome in studio with us today, Michael Rupert and Megan McInnes are with us.
We have a little bit.
They are.
We take them with us everywhere.
Magical, isn't it?
And
the
Paul,
high-tech stuff we got.
We do. It's
I think since there's two guests, you should applaud twice.
Don't spare no expense here.
First up, welcome, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to have to call him.
Us.
I'm going to have to call him Rupert. I'm going to call you Rupert for the whole show, just so there's no confusion.
Well, you know, actually, a lot of people call me Rupert.
Yeah, in rehearsals.
Really?
In rehearsals, we call him Rupert.
You know,
do you?
Susie Dietz, one of our producers, Cheryl. Yeah.
Okay.
People call me Rupert.
Okay. And Megan, can I call you Megan?
You certainly can.
Okay, good. Megan is an Ovation Award winner.
I know that.
I just want you to know.
I knew that.
She ripped my head off in the lobby like you would win.
Oh, no.
This lovely
she
young
did.
Thing.
I said, congratulations on your Ovation Award nomination. Winner! Winner! She did
no,
not. I'm exaggerating.
I didn't.
She
was
I'm exaggerating.
She couldn't.
She's not capable of
remember,
that.
Remember, this is the young lady we saw on stage in Daddy Long Legs.
I know.
Giving
I know.
An amazing
yeah.
performance for which
Oh, that was at the Broad in
That's
Santa
right.
Monica?
That's
oh, you
right.
saw it at the Broad?
Yes. Yeah, I saw the production, yes.
It was lovely.
It was wonderful. And a beautiful space, by the way.
Yes,
phenomenal.
Gorgeous.
$40 million new jewel by the sea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely gorgeous. And Paul,
yes.
speaking of jewels... You went to...
Oh, don't give me a setup like that.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the family jewels.
I'm sorry, Michael. Would you say that again, please?
I said I'm not talking about the family jewels.
Good night, everybody. Tell your friends.
Try
the veal. Yes.
No, we have another jewel.
The 10 o'clock show is different from the 8 o'clock.
We look forward to speaking to both Michael and Megan, but let's talk a little bit, Paul, about our week and your week in particular, because you were really out and about this week, much more so than I was.
Yes, I saw a couple of shows. I saw Room Service, that Open Fist Theater did, which was phenomenal, which we'll talk about later in the hour. And I saw Loudon Wainwright III and Sean Colvin at this fantastic new venue up at the campus of Cal State Northridge.
Yes.
Which is the Valley Performing Arts Center, which is, you said, $40 million. There's a $125 million venue up there right in the middle of the valley. And those of us that live in the valley are elated about this because it's a fantastic space. And to see those people perform up there, just one problem. And it has nothing to do with the space, has nothing to do with the venue. The venue was fantastic. Everything, I mean, really beautiful. Sound quality, excellent.
Yeah.
But, Michael, you attend a lot of theater.
I do,
okay.
Yeah.
And our guests, of course, are theater performers, but I'm imagining you guys attend a great deal of theater as well.
Oh, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
At any point, you plan your evening, you plan to park, you do that, you put on your clothes, you go out, you get the whole evening,
right.
Happening.
Yeah.
And then, at any point in the evening, does the following thought occur to you? I'm going to wait until about 8:20 to eat these nachos. Does anyone else think about that?
Some chick
behind me, like, you got 24 hours a day to eat. You have to wait until 8:20.
Right.
Loudon Wainwright is up there, and it's just like, this next song is about my first, album, and it's just like, So, I mean, if I ever, if you ever get a call, okay, at like 11 o'clock at night,
yes,
and it's me, and I need bail money, you will know it's because I straggled someone in the theater. Because, and I could just see myself, you know, in cell block C. What are you in for?
I was, well, Marvin Hamlisch and Betty Buckley were at the Valley Performing Arts Center, and someone behind me was texting. It was Ed Blackham.
Well, but so, you know, you bring up a good point, a valid point. I mean, we were talking about this at our meeting earlier this afternoon, and people today, it's anything and everything, isn't it?
Yep.
It's just
truly
a free-for-all in the theater, and the texting thing is truly obnoxious.
Out of hand.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Out of hand. When you can see a glow of blue on the audience, you know, from the stage.
And we do see it.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
I'm
just
sure
it. People think that we performers are on television. Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, they're, I mean, I did a show that eight feet away. It's like, I'm in the same room too, you know? Do you encounter that at Sterling's upstairs?
Often? We do. We do indeed. It's an announcement that you know gets very sternly made at the you know in a nice stern kind of way at the beginning.
Well, as stern as you can manage with your dulcet tones.
Well, you know, to that degree.
Please don't. Please turn your cell phones off. But first, a little Barry White.
No, but it makes no difference. I was telling Paul, citing an example where somebody was headlining my supper club, and their manager was sitting at the table in front of my table. And, you know, the announcements have been made and whatever. And the client is on stage. And this manager never looked up at that client.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
For 1 hour. Was texting for 1 hour.
Well, unbelievable.
And I thought it was, I thought it was the most disrespectful thing in the world.
And, you know, and it's like, I don't, and it's one of these things, I hate to dwell on it, because those of us who have done live theater or attended live theater in Southern California especially, getting people out to shows out here is one of God's great mysteries with the traffic and everything. Oh. So we're very, very grateful to for the people that do attend. And that's it. You want their experience to be as great as possible, but you want the other people need to be educated. The other people need to be educated. So anyway, I'm off my soapbox
Now.
Well,
the talking in the theater was one thing I wanted to mention too, because that drives me crazy. And I have actually, and I know Paul has said things to people too when he's been discouraged by incidents like you just described, but I've actually leaned over and said to people, could you talk a little louder? Because you know, the actors on the stage, you know, they can't hear
the
what you're saying.
The actors can't hear you.
Whereas
they're
say that, and I just cut them. Yeah. That's it. I'm a cutter. let's move to nicer topics.
Indeed.
Let's move to nicer topics.
So our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, received a Tony Award nomination for his Broadway debut in Candor and Ebb's The Happy Time and has been a fixture on the Great White Way ever since, with roles in Pippin, City of Angels, Ragtime, Legally Blonde, to name a few. He received the Tony Award for Best Performance by a Featured Actor in a Musical for Sweet Charity. Please welcome Mr. Michael Rupert.
I only have five sound bites.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yes, I don't have. Well, wait till you hear what you get. You got to. So, we'll keep you.
They've got something good for you, man.
No.
Michael, it is so great to have you in the studio, and Megan, and you as well, and for Michael, as I told you, Paul, it's a little bit of a reunion for us, because we've known each other since we were children, but we haven't seen each other very often during those years.
No, not at all. It's
and ironically, we're all in the same restaurant this afternoon, just didn't know it.
No.
That's we were in one side of the restaurant having a meeting. They were in another side.
At Jinkies.
Were you there, Megan?
No, I was at Baja Fresh.
Oh, you were?
Sorry.
You can't say it on the air without a... Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that rule.
I was at a Mexican place that rhymes with Aha Fresh.
But aren't you glad you're out here right now?
Oh, my God. Well, we got out here. I flew out here Christmas night.
Wow. Mm.
And I think the first blizzard hit the next day,
you
know, in New York. And this has just been, you know, I mean, there's a reason people come to California, you know, because this is great.
Oh,
of course, this, you know, in New York, this has been, like, awful.
Oh,
this has been one of the worst winters that we've had in many, many years, as long as I can remember. I've lived in New York a long time now. But boy, this is great.
My mom is in Connecticut, and so she gets angry that our weather is good.
Yeah.
Paul, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Don't tell me. Mom, it's nice. I took the motorcycle out. I don't want to know that you can ride a motorcycle when I'm sitting in this shit over here.
No, that's it. You know, because you talk to people in New York and you know, in the last few weeks, and you say, hey, you want to know what the temperature is today? No, I do not want to know what the temperature is today.
They don't.
Leave me alone.
That's what Facebook
or they just hang
is
up,
for.
You know. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, just go to Facebook. And
exactly.
And say, ha-ha, we're out in California, and it's 80. Yeah.
No, I'm actually more of a jerk about it. I'm just like, I lead it off with, you're not going to believe this. I got up this morning, it was 48.
Right.
And, you know, no one, you know, what are we, animals? No one knows how we suffer.
Right.
Well, but I mean, it's weird, though. Isn't it kind of unusual, though? I mean, you said worst winter since what? Do you remember the year?
Well, I can't remember. I mean, we had, you know, we've had winters, certainly, where we've had, like, a major blizzard.
Right, exactly.
Where the city has actually come to a standstill.
Right.
You know? I mean, you've been there, right?
Yeah,
you know,
I've had at least two in my...
Yeah, exactly. But this one is—it's just like—and there's two more on their way apparently.
That's just it. There's no recovery.
The news this morning.
There's no recovery.
There's no recovery.
Yeah.
You know, they're really having a—it's bad. Yeah. You know, and I'm really glad I'm out here doing Dangerous Beauty.
So tell us about Dangerous Beauty. Tell us about
the Pasadena Playhouse.
Dangerous Beauty.
Well, it's about people in a snowstorm.
And well, my first encounter with Dangerous Beauty was watching this one. And Jenny Powers on the stage of New York Stage and Film. I saw a workshop of this show.
Oh, really?
In 2005.
In 2005, up at Vassar. And Cheryl Keller, our director, is a friend. And I was actually doing something up there as well. I was doing another workshop. And I went to see this thing, and I just loved it. I mean, there was such potential in it, you know, And so I always kept in the back of my head, like, gee, if Cheryl ever does a production of this, maybe I can play the old guy, you know? Maybe I could play Domenico. And oddly enough, this production came up, and I get an email.
Well, I'm sure the check
Cheryl
helped.
And Susie.
I'm sure the check helped.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, it did. And the flowers. And the brand new car. You know, the whole bit. But, you know, so I got an email from them saying, hey, how about coming out and doing Dangerous Beauty? And so here I am.
So now you said that there was a lot of potential in seeing the workshop. Has it? How significant has the transformation been from that original production to the one you guys are doing?
Well, Megan can really tell you because she's been through it, you know. But I remember what I saw. I remember, you know, well, it had a very different opening number. I remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot of things that needed work.
Which is the purpose of the workshop.
That's where it was at. The process you go through. And it needed focusing. The story wasn't clear enough. There was,
it's a true story.
Just all of that stuff, you know, that,
It's a true story.
It's based on a real woman, Veronica Franco.
Yeah, how much of the, without giving it too much away and because we obviously want people to attend it, but how much of the premise can you share with us? Or do you want to?
Well,
because you're looking at me now like I asked you to show me your tattoo.
It's a secret.
You want to know what the play's about?
Yeah. Well, Megan probably can tell you better than I even.
It is all historical, so you could read the book and discover everything.
Oh,
happen,
I'm not big on books.
Oh, really?
Unless they're audiobooks.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
But it's also a film.
Not a read.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's originally, all of it is based on the book The Honest Courtesan.
Mm-hmm.
And Janine Domini, our book writer, also adapted it for the screen. Dangerous Beauty, the film, in, I think it was 98?
98, I think. Yeah.
And Janine always pictured it as a musical as well. And Amanda McBroom and Michelle Browerman, our lyricist and composer, started to adapt it with Janine. So it's all based on Veronica Franco, who is basically the first female poet who was ever published in the 1500s in Venice.
Oh, wow.
Poetry was very big back then.
Huge.
I mean, this was a thing, you know. I mean, I play a character who is, I'm the master poet of Venice, and I have a salon, you know, where people come and do poetry.
Right.
And they would have poetry duels, where, you know, it's a fascinating story. It really is.
Well, when you think about it, that was, I mean, that was entertainment. I mean, that was, I mean, you had theater, but,
absolutely,
you know,
right.
And, but that is something that you could do. It's almost like poetry in that sort of climate is almost like parlor magic was in the beginning of this century, because, mm-hmm, you know, there, when the Depression hit and all that, the big performance venues, they all had to have small performances and intimate performances, and something like that is something that you could do without having to have a big theater. And, you know, it was, I'm sure it was very big with the upper class too, to very, you know, elegant to have. I mean, is that the sort of thing, like in a home, like the salon that you mentioned, was that an actual, that's in someone's,
it's
home,
actually,
right?
A house,
yeah, right,
it's
in
a
someone's
house
home
in Venice,
right?
And they, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but many of the characters, this really is the upper class of Venetian society at the,
okay,
time,
absolutely,
that we are in. You,
okay,
know.
And it was either men or courtesans. No women, unless they were courtesans. So,
really?
If you were a wife, you were at home.
Yeah, you couldn't learn. You weren't supposed to read books. It was the courtesans.
You weren't allowed in the
who
libraries.
They were allowed in the libraries.
Yeah.
Really?
The courtesans are the most educated women in the world. That's one of the lines from the show.
Yeah.
And you see Veronica in our story. You see her at the beginning wanting that knowledge, wanting the world that only men were allowed, and discovering that becoming a courtesan was actually the only way she'd be allowed into that world.
Wow. That's, yeah, very intriguing.
Yeah.
It's very political, too. You know, there's a lot of politics, you know, because...
Well, sexual politics, certainly.
Well,
absolutely.
You know. But also, it was that whole kind of thing, too, where women married for, you know, for political reasons.
Yeah.
You know?
You see my character...
Megan's character, right?
I sort of serve as the opposite of Veronica. We're best friends, and you see her go one direction and me go the complete opposite direction. I'm the woman who has to marry someone much older than herself simply because they need his money and stature.
Right.
In,
yeah,
Venice.
His position,
yes.
He knows the Pope. You know, it's that,
exactly,
kind of thing. You know, he,
yeah,
seriously,
yeah.
I mean, it's,
oh,
like,
yeah,
it's all that political stuff.
Yeah. So then you see me feel like I'm in my cage versus what Veronica then learns what her cage is like,
okay,
as a courtesan as well.
Gotcha.
It's very great.
Oh,
really,
no, it sounds incredible.
Yeah.
It sounds incredible.
Well,
and oddly enough, I'm a fan of Venice and also courtesans. So it works out. Well, it's a perfect show.
This is your show.
This is your show.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Thank you all I don't know what I was thinking. I got to talk on the fly, but I'm thank you for forgiving my magic metaphor. I was talking about magic shows in the beginning of the century, and they both sort of nodded and smiled like, let's get back,
yeah,
to the play.
Okay. We're just going to go with that.
Yeah,
magic,
yeah,
thing. Let's,
yeah,
let him go.
He's got the control panel in front of him, so we don't want to piss
effects
him off.
Yeah, yeah. He'll, yeah, do one of those sound effects things.
That's right.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. See, Michael, what you started. Now, yeah, but you know what I find interesting? Not only are we talking about a tremendously interesting piece of history, but we're also talking about an amazing creative team that is working with you on this, right? I mean, in every aspect, from your choreographer to who is is the artistic director of the Cedar Lake Contemporary Ballet and Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes, he's,
yeah,
incredible.
And to your music director from Broadway South Pacific and also orchestrations by Bruce Coughlin,
mm-hmm,
or Tony Award winner for Light in the Piazza. My God.
Yeah.
You know, how many more? What?
We've got a great team.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
okay.
It really is. It's an amazing group of people. You know, it's a great team.
And everybody's out here in California, and they're probably all from back east too, right? With the exception of Amanda, I think she lives here.
Amanda and Michelle live here.
Yeah.
Yes.
But,
yeah,
everyone else, we have some cast members also who are local.
Yeah, a lot of the cast is.
Yeah, a lot
is
of the cast
here
is local, and then there's a couple of us.
Catherine Malak, who is in your cast. Do you know that name?
Cat.
Oh, Cat.
See, we call her Cat.
It's Cat.
Is her name Catherine?
Those of us that are in the know, Cat.
Well,
that's
excuse
her name.
Me.
And Nikki the Nose, who's working backstage, friend of mine.
No, well, I bring her up, and please give her my regards because she headlined my supper club not too long ago.
Oh, wonderful.
She's fantastic.
Oh,
she
yeah.
is. She is and she's
what
kooky
a voice.
And crazy. Yeah,
yeah we have a great cast. Great cast.
It's an wonderful. Amazing group of people. It
well,
really is.
We certainly should tell people, ladies and gentlemen, that if you want to go see this wonderful musical.
And you do.
And who wouldn't?
Absolutely.
Cat, Nikki the Nose. Courtesans. What more could you want?
And these two crazy kids, yes. Michael Rupert and Megan McGinnis. It is at the Pasadena Playhouse. It's currently in previews, actually. Its official opening is on February 13th, and it runs through March 6th. And it's so wonderful to go back to the Pasadena Playhouse and the
Which
little
is,
scare we had with it being closed for a while. And
but the resurgence of that place is just, it's crackling now.
Amazing.
Especially after the Ed Asner show that was there that was so successful.
Indeed. And one more very important thing. Tickets are available by calling the Pasadena Playhouse at 626 area code 356-7529. Or by visiting the Pasadena Playhouse box office Mondays through the week, starting at 12 o'clock until 5 p.m. and Sunday 12 p.m. till 6. And also available 24 hours a day by going to PasadenaPlayhouse.org.
And a lot of people don't know that Ed Asner was actually up for the role of the main courtesan in this.
Really?
But the scheduling conflicts just couldn't work it out. But he's a chameleon, that guy.
Well, you know, yeah.
I don't think Jenny knows.
He takes risks.
don't tell Jenny. Don't tell Jenny Powers.
Michael Rupert, let's get back to you just for a moment, Michael, and talk to you about some of the other things that you've done in your career. And from The Happy Time, which is something we talked about earlier before the show went on the air, and with the wonderful Robert Goulet, and that experience that started in Los Angeles and then
yes.
found its
yeah.
way to New York. And that was your first Broadway experience, right?
That was my first Broadway show. I was 15. We opened out here. We were the second show to ever play the Amundsen Theater.
Yes, I remember.
Really?
It was brand new.
Yeah,
the Music Center had just been built. And I was a kid. Yeah, I was 15. And Gower Champion, who directed the thing, had a really hard time finding a kid to play this, you know, a teenager to play this role. He had looked at apparently hundreds of people all over the place. I was like the second to last person to audition for the show. And I got it. Oh. Maybe he was desperate. He said, I'm not seeing any more kids. Forget this. You know, let's use that kid. Anyway, so it was quite an experience. I went back to New York. For the first time, the show ran a little under a year. It wasn't mm-hmm. hugely successful,
right.
but that was I guess it was when my mom was sitting with me at the Tony Awards, and I'd been nominated for a Tony at 15. She thought, oh, God, he really is going to do this, isn't he? Because she thought I was probably going to end up an orthodontist, you know, or something. You know, I'd do it as a kid, and then,
right,
you know.
Right.
But it was an amazing experience. Robert Goulet was quite a guy.
Yes,
and
he was.
I was very, very moved when he passed away. It was a great personal loss for me for some reason. And I hadn't even seen him in some years, but at the time he was so kind to me and he was like a big brother.
Right.
You know, I was a
right.
teenager and he was like in his 30s at the time, I think, and mid 30s, but he treated me like his kid brother and he was something. Yeah.
Well, you know, with someone of his stature too, I think when someone like that passes away and they're kind of bigger than life because of the career that they had in their lifetime.
Absolutely.
You know, from his days in Las Vegas and then the ultimate career going into New York and back on Broadway again where he first started and then having a whole resurgence in his career in the theater.
Absolutely.
You know, which was fantastic for him to do.
Yeah.
And he loved all of that. And yes, I felt the same way actually because he was a client, I told you.
Right.
Of mine.
Oh, you was a client of yours?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, we started.
You have to put this in my promotional material, Michael. Because
how
can I talk?
You know, we're here to talk about other people and their careers. Not
actually, one of my clients, Robert Blake. So it was not quite the same.
Shoot.
Yes. Yeah, it was a little different.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Well, I'm sorry. It's the first Robert I could think of. Look, at least I didn't talk about a magician named Robert.
Well, Michael went on and he did Pippin, of course, on Broadway, and then Sweet Charity, for which he did win the Tony Award, Best Performance by a Featured Actor in a Musical, and Falsettos, which I had the pleasure of seeing you do in Los Angeles.
Right. Yeah, we did it out here.
And more recently, Legally Blonde.
Yes, Legally
Broadway,
Blonde.
And the national tour.
Yeah.
And what a great show that was, actually. I saw it here at the Pentagon.
Legally Blonde?
And I saw it on the MTV version of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, because Legally Blonde was, so many of my friends said, you're going to do what? You're going to do Legally Blonde? I mean, so many of my friends came to see it and were kind of shocked at how smart the show really was.
Mm-hmm.
It was
I loved it.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, it was funny. A lot of the lyrics mm-hmm. were clever and well done, and the music was exactly what it needed to be for that material. Jerry Mitchell, I think, put together a terrific production. It was a great group of people. You know, the first week, I got to be honest, the first week was very funny because I was easily old enough to be everybody's dad in this play. You know, because a lot of these, you know, you probably know some of them, Megan. You know, a lot of these people were making their Broadway debuts. Some of them were like 21, 22, 23. And the energy in the rehearsal room was bouncing off the walls
yeah.
for the first week. And I finally, at the end of the week, I went over to Jerry, who I'd known for years and was a friend. You know, I said, I'm exhausted. These kids are exhausting, yeah. you know. And he said, are you going to rein them in a little bit at any point? And he said, well, no, you know, this is what the show is. It's fun. It's going to be bouncy. And it was. I mean, it took me a few days to kind of get used to the energy that was in that show.
Yeah.
Because I'm a lot older than they are, you know. But it was an amazing group of actors too. I mean, Christian Borle and Laura Bell Bundy and the ensemble, the kid, you know, just all, I call them kids because they were my kids. You know, all the kids in the show were just so talented and so great. And, you know, and again, a lot like what we're dealing with right now. I mean, over at Dangerous Beauty, it's really quite a cast.
Where you're the old guy again? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Yes. I am the old. Well, there's one other old guy in it, too, who's kind of. He's younger
I'm joking, of course.
I actually love being the old guy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I do.
You get treated with more respect.
Well, no.
I wouldn't know because I'm only 20.
In 20. Anyway.
You can say that when you're on the radio.
That's right. I've been told I have a face for radio, so. We should pay the bills.
We should probably do that. Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Shall I kick off? Actually, I think we only have one featured thing for our live arts calendar today, but I will take it if you don't mind.
Yes.
Spring Awakening, the 2007 Tony Award winner for Best Musical and 2008 Grammy Award winner for Best Musical Show Album, will return to L.A. for 1 week only at Hollywood's iconic Pantages Theater. I got that out with no stumbling.
You did.
Iconic Pantages Theater. Set against the backdrop of a repressive and provincial late 19th century Germany, Spring Awakening follows a group of young students as they navigate through teenage self-discovery and coming-of-age anxiety. The multi-Tony Award-winning, critically acclaimed musical is based on the 1891 Frank Wedekind, do I have that right?
Wedekind
play, and is a stirring combination of sexuality, morality, and rock and roll that has captivated audience across the nation like no other musical in years. Don't miss it. Opening tomorrow, February 8th through February 13th. Oh, a very short run.
Yes,
at the Pantages Theater in Hollywood.
And for more information, ladies and gentlemen, about the arts in Los Angeles and throughout Southern California, please visit performingartslive.com and, as always, stateoftheartsla.com.
And if you want to chat with us about anything or send us an email to let us know about something you'd like to hear about, send us an email at stateoftheartsla@gmail.com.
So all of the .coms are out of the way, Paul.
Yes, they are. Yes, they
and
are.
Now we want to talk about some theater. So why don't you want me to start off or do you want to start
off? I can start off.
Okay,
I can start off. I saw a production at the Open Fist Theater in Hollywood of the definitive 30s screwball comedies called Room Service. This is written by the same people who did Light Up the Sky
mm-hmm.
and is a little similar in style, but I actually think the Room Service is a funnier play than Light Up the Sky. It's certainly more manic. And when you go to see a play like this in this classic 30s farce, the hope is always that the company will honor the style. And when a company like, you know, this one embraces and employs the style so completely that it seems organic rather than applied, you hit it out of the park. And that is what they've done with this production.
It's, wow.
That 30s farce is sort of like, I always thought of it as like the American version of Monty Python, because it is silly, but it's very smart silly. It's smart and it's intricate silly that can sustain three acts. And this particular play is far more topical than it appears to be on the surface, because all of the themes, I mean, it came up in the Depression. It was the early 30s, and the themes are, you know, what you're going to encounter. People struggling with money, losing jobs, losing homes, being evicted. They're serious matters, but they're, you know, comedic fodder for this thing, and it's high comedy. The cast, just, you can't even single anyone out. I will try to, but it just really crackles. It fires on all four cylinders, and it really, my wife and I were talking about it when we were leaving. You know, you go to the play, let's honor the playwright, let's make sure the play is done well. And then I almost felt like I traveled back in time, because I felt like I saw this play at the time that it was written. Mm-hmm. That's how well this cast, you know, brought this thing to the stage. I mean, catch it while you can. It's just great. I do want to single out just a couple of people. Derek Manson, who played Gordon Miller, it's a big cast and ensemble piece, but mm-hmm. if there's a hub in the wheel, it's this guy, because the script. And there's a gentleman named Philip William Brock, who has a sort of a mixed role. He's got a lot of straight man duties, but he's got a lot of comedic stuff, and he works it just beautifully. And Joe Liss, who is a friend of mine from Chicago, a Second City guy from Chicago, is actually not a friend of mine. We did one commercial together, but it was a lot of fun. And he really, I mean, not only does he play the role well, but he looks the role. He looks like he dropped right out on one of the WPA photographs of the time. He just wears the character like a skin. So it's at Open Fist in Hollywood, and tickets are available at openfist.org, and it's playing through March 12th. And next week we're going to have, it's co-directed by Ron Orbach and a gentleman named Bjorn, I don't have his name in front of me, Bjorn Johnson, I'm sorry. And we're going to have both of them on the show next week. We're going to have Ron, along with Davis Gaines.
Yes, sure.
But we're going to have Ron Orbach in studio, and I think Bjorn is going to call in so we can talk to both of them about the process of bringing this thing to the stage.
Nice.
So
nice.
That was room service. And
and the Open Fist company is really one of our, you know, our great smaller companies in town. We have so many of them now. You know, from what started out when, Michael, when you and I were in a show together in Hollywood years ago, I mean, it's impressive, isn't it? As a New Yorker, you take a look at this and think, well, LA is doing not so bad.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, I had the pleasure and follow-up to having had Broadway's David Burnham with us last week as a guest. I attended producers Bruce Kimmel and Adrian Russ's monthly live event at the very intimate Gardenia Supper Club in Hollywood, based on select albums that Mr. Kimmel has produced over the years. And this past Wednesday night's presentation of the Sherman Brothers album, complete with Richard Sherman on hand for the celebration, was chock full of some of the world's greatest and forever classic movie compositions. Richard and his brother Robert, dubbed by Walt Disney himself as The Boys, the two-time Academy Award-winning brothers, wrote more motion picture musical song scores than any other songwriting team in film history while working for Walt Disney during the last 6 years of Mr. Disney's life. And those films, film scores included the Sherman Brothers' Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Parent Trap, The Jungle Book, The Happiest Millionaire, and The Aristocrats, to name just a few. So much praise goes out to the evening's performers, up-and-coming young Ben Platt and the very young and delightful Melody Hollis, the riveting Alette Taylor, the gorgeous and captivating Juliana Hanson, and the spectacular and engaging David Burnham, with not only his million-dollar smile, but a voice to match. Do you know David?
I don't. I know who he is.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, what a nice man
he is.
He owes me money.
He does.
He does?
No, he doesn't. Was he in Light in the Piazza?
He was.
Yes,
he did. I think
and
I saw
on
him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Wicked. Did you just say Wicked? Yes, he did.
I did not say that.
He created the role of Fiero in the workshop out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, he did?
And then
did
not go into the show on New York. He took Light in the Piazza instead.
Right,
and then
right.
came full circle back to doing
Love
Wicked.
How that works.
We had him on the show last week.
Last week,
and,
yes.
Just
indeed.
A real charmer. Nice kid. Cool. Nice kid.
But I do want to add that the pinnacle of the evening arrived when Richard Sherman himself recalled his weekly meetings with Walt Disney at the studio in Burbank.
Oh, he was there?
He was there. And Mr. Disney's frequent requests for Richard to play and sing Walt's favorite song, Feed the Birds from Mary Poppins. Mm. And that he did. In those days when Mr. Disney asked, and he also did that last Wednesday night to a very heartfelt and much deserved standing ovation. And it was indeed an honor to meet the oh-so-young 82-year-old Richard Sherman and to be part of reliving the many albums produced by the unique and very passionate Critcherland Records. And for more information, ladies and gentlemen, about this concert series, visit Critcherland at the Gardenia on Facebook or call the Gardenia at 323-467-7444. Once again, 323-467-7444. And in March, they're coming up with a tribute to Irving Berlin and the not so often songs that of Mr. Berlin's that people have heard, and it's a wonderful series. So
the lesser known ones,
lesser known songs, yes.
Songs that fell behind the stove while cooking, I like to say.
Well, there you go, yes. And some gems have come out of those situations. We know that.
I don't want to go too long because I don't want to eat into Megan's time too much, but I want to just wrap it up with, I did, as I said at the top of the hour, Valley Performing Arts Center saw Loudon Wainwright III and Sean Colvin. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic show and a great way for them to segue into the start. It was the inaugural performance at this place, and it was a great way to do it because they're just classic American troubadour, folky kind of sound, and it was very simple, very elegant, very almost like a like the world's biggest coffee house. You know, it was in a beautiful venue there. Loudon Wainwright, I'm a huge fan, and I was not especially familiar with Sean Colvin, but she was great and did an incredible cover of an old Tom, not so old, but a great Tom Waits song called Hold On, which was a highlight of her performance for me. And Loudon, you know, Loudon's got a new album that he was selling there that I picked up in the lobby called 10 Songs for the New Depression, which I thought was a great, because a lot of the stuff he does on NPR and all that. But Valley Performing Arts Center, a new venue that I think will really generate quite the following, because
I hope so.
Beautiful space up there. So
I hope so. And how can people go see this?
What's that?
How can people go to the Valley Music Theater?
I believe it's valleyperformingarts.org. I'm not sure, but it's Valley Performing Arts Center, and it's, I don't have the promo stuff in front of me, but it's on the campus of Cal State Northridge.
Fantastic. Well, I know we're going to have their artistic director and their executive director of the theater on with us in the weeks to come, Paul. So thank you for that. And ladies and gentlemen, our next guest was last seen on Broadway starring as Eponine in the revival of Les Miserables. In addition, she originated the role of Beth March in the Broadway musical Little Women and played a year-long run as Belle in Beauty and the Beast. Other Broadway credits include the Tony Award-winning Thoroughly Modern Millie and the revival of The Diary of Anne Frank. She recently received a Los Angeles Stage Alliance Ovation Award for her performance in the Rubicon Theater's production of Daddy Long Legs, a new musical. Please welcome Miss Megan McGinnis.
Michael, I don't mean to correct you, but I think she was just nominated.
We had that discussion, didn't we?
Yeah. No, she's a winner. She did.
She is a winner.
She took the statue home.
We knew she was a winner when we saw her poem, when you and I went to review
and Daddy Long Legs
at the Broad in Santa Monica.
Which I kept calling the Broad Theater on the air.
Yes, he did.
Didn't correct me till later.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
They cut us
the
off.
The beautiful theater, Santa Monica, the Broad. It's a Broad. It's a beautiful, beautiful joint.
It's the New York in you.
Yes, it is.
And you were something else, really. Really, how spellbinding. And what a tremendous vehicle for two people to carry that kind of a show again. You know, it's not often we get to see a musical with two people in it anymore, right?
Absolutely. And certainly not a full-length musical. Most two-people shows are shorter, perhaps a one-act.
Right.
But we were, you know, two hours, 20 minutes. And
that was one of the most impressive things about seeing it, was that I didn't know anything about the show going to see it. And when you just go and then you look at the program and you're just like, oh, well, then maybe there's an insert, you know. And it's like, oh, it's two people. And then it becomes, I found myself enjoying it more because then the performer in me was sort of like, oh, they have to be just loving this.
It's an actor's dream.
Yeah.
I mean, very simply an actor's dream, because neither of us left stage, so you lived it out in real time. I mean, sure, 4 years passed in those 2 hours, but it was so great, and there'll be more productions of it too, so Rob and I will probably go back and do it again sometime.
Oh, wow, that'd be great. Yeah. Anything local that you know about, or can't
not
you
allowed
say?
To talk about
Uh-oh.
It yet.
Okay. It's okay. Just share
sure
with us.
Just
we won't tell anybody.
Four of us.
We won't tell anybody. Just speak into the inkwell, Megan.
In the meantime, Megan is joining Michael Rupert at the Pasadena Playhouse in Dangerous Beauty, and we've been talking about that a little earlier with Michael, and what an interesting experience this has been for you, as we started talking about at the beginning of the show. Huh?
It's always great to see a journey all the way through, so to start this production in 2005, and now here we are. January. No, February. February 2011.
6 years later. It's been long rehearsal hours.
Yes.
We don't even know.
I don't know what
day
it is.
What day is it?
No.
You know, all we know is it's the day off today.
Yes,
finally.
Exactly.
We have a day off.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful that you like to spend it with us.
Of course, of course. I did that once before with Little Women. I had a five-year process with that show as well. So to watch something change so much, and as Michael said, to see such potential in a project and then really see it fulfilled.
How
it's really
could you,
incredible.
How can you be old enough to have a history like this? You look like you're about 18. How could you?
I
you know?
Am.
Oh, is it?
But it, you know, that what a cool thing, really. Yeah. And you know, most people don't realize that it takes this long-term process for these shows to arrive at the place that they arrive at.
It really does. And
they're not written overnight.
No, absolutely not. And to speed the process up really does a disservice to it.
Yeah, creating a new musical, you know, we've all been through this process. You know, it's like one of the most difficult things you can do. There's so many different disciplines that have to all come together, and you know, and it's so, like Megan's saying, for her to see, for her to have been Megan to have been a part of this since the beginning, you know, to see it kind of finally start to come together and oh, it's making sense and et cetera. It's great.
Well, and David mentioned this, and I'm curious if this happened to you, and that is, do you ever find yourself losing your favorite things?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But usually when you lose something that's a favorite, you gain something new that right. becomes a favorite.
And if you can look at it as in terms of the whole piece rather than...
Yes. Well, yeah. And of course as actors, we think of our characters and our storylines, but you do have to step back occasionally and say, no, it's an entire show that we need to worry about, not just my character.
And it depends on the show, too, because it's in terms of things like Daddy Longlegs, it would be like, well, now I only have 19 songs.
How many songs? Did you tell me you had 26 songs?
There are 26 songs.
In Daddy Longlegs.
And I think Rob and I sang most of them together. I think he sang... four without me, and then I sang quite a few alone as well. Yeah, it was a lot of singing, but not the singing was not what was so tiring. It was the talking. There were quite a few monologues in there because it was all letters back and forth to each other. So it was a lot of talking.
But the script, I remember that, Michael. We talked about this. The script of Daddy Longlegs was what you're talking about, better than it had to be. You know, as we talked about with musicals, a lot of the times the last, and we have to have some, you know, a thread here to get from here to here. But because of the letters...
Oh, yes. Not with John Caird. No,
at all.
He's quite the writer.
So we were talking earlier about the process of Dangerous Beauty and that you, with the workshop, and what was that process like for
you? Well, as far as I was thinking about losing favorite things, as you mentioned, Jenny and I, so Jenny Powers, who plays Veronica, our lead, she and I both did the workshop in 2005. We're the only two people who've sort of carried on through that entire process over the 6 years. And we used to have this song that they wrote while we were up at Vassar, New York Stage and Film, and it was so lovely, and I really fell in love with it, and it was cut. But now we have this section in the opening. The opening is quite a number. It's vast and beautiful and spectacular, and we have this sort of small section where we're introduced that we sing, and that is now my favorite moment.
Okay.
And so, you know, you lose something, gain something new. And we did our sits probe the other day, which is where we all sing through the songs with the orchestra. And
what is that term?
Sits probe.
Sits probe.
Yes.
Does it stand for something?
It's German for sitting and
probing.
Probing, really.
Yes.
Or sitting and listening.
Yeah.
And it's the first time that the cast is with the orchestra. We hear the orchestrations for the first time.
Okay.
It's
and our orchestrations, by the way, are by Bruce Coughlin, who won the Tony, I think you mentioned
this,
for Light in the Piazza. I mean, they're pretty...
He's brilliant.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
And but, it's a shame you guys couldn't get good people.
But we were sitting there at the Sitz Probe, and the creative team is there watching, and you know, all the actors are there, and Jenny and I stood up and sang our moment in the opening, and Cheryl started crying, and I started crying, and Jenny started crying, because it was just that moment of realizing we'd made this journey. Yeah. It's really great.
No, it is. And that's a great, and I think that's an incredibly wonderfully optimistic way to look at, you know, it, like you say, you know, something might get cut, but then you don't know that maybe your next favorite thing will eclipse the old thing. And it sounds like that's what happened.
And we're not done yet. That's the most beautiful thing, really. You have to have patience.
It's also that old cliche about, you know, a show's never finished, it just opens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's that old saying, you know, it's never done, you just open, because you run out of time.
Yeah.
But, there's going to be a lot more. We're putting in a lot of changes this week into the show. And
really?
Yeah, rehearsal every day.
We have rehearsal every afternoon
and
do the show at night. And it's like Megan said, it's you know, it's just, it's a very difficult thing to do, to tell the story correctly, you know. And you know, you just keep working on it till it opens.
What show, Michael, was when David was on recently, he was talking about this process, and he said that there was a show that he worked on that when they first sort of put it up for a workshop stage reading, the first act was 3 hours.
It was Wicked.
It was Wicked.
Yeah.
He was talking about, I don't think people realize how much, you know, chiseling has happened by the time that opening night.
Well, not a clue. Not a clue at all.
And especially about Sitz probing.
Well, and I know what was going. I know what was going through your mind when
no,
you said
I just,
that.
But I have to respect
a Sitz bath. That's what was going through your mind.
There's also a Vondel probe, which is wandering.
Walk
around while singing with the orchestra.
A Vondel probe
is
the first time you're on stage and with the orchestra in the pit, and we walk around and listen.
I see.
Yeah. So you do a Sitz probe and a Vondel probe.
Oddly enough, the wandering probe is a little more unnerving to me. I don't know why.
Sounds
I don't
like
know
a
why.
Gilbert and Sullivan song. The wandering probe am I.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
I am the very model of a wander probe.
To see Dangerous Beauty once again, go see this wonderful show with these two wonderful artists
are we
on
going?
The Broadway stage. We are going.
Are we? When,
yes,
when
we
are we going?
When we're going either before
the
opening or possibly on the 13th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm sorry, I interrupted the important information.
Okay. The Pasadena Playhouse, ladies and gentlemen. And for tickets, they are available by calling the Pasadena Playhouse at area code 626-356-7529 or visiting the Playhouse online at pasadenaplayhouse.org.
And also, you know, and I think this is important because it sounds like this would be a good one for that. Group sales, 15 or more, call 626-921-1159. That's 626-921-1159. And if you call before midnight tonight, I will provide a Sitz probe.
Oh,
you,
my.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm just that much
you
of a...
You might want to wait until...
offer you can...
Yes,
refuse.
Michael will handle the Vondel probe, but I will do the Sitz probe. So send
I'll happily,
an email.
Make that exchange. Okay. We have to initiate you, Michael and Megan, into our hall of shame, as it were, with stories of your most awkward and or embarrassing moments on stage while in performance. So, Megan, we're going to start with you.
You know, I was racking my brain and trying to think of a really great, embarrassing story, like, you know, my pants falling down or missing my prop or line. No, I don't really have any of those. So the one I could come up with is during Daddy Long Legs, I spoke to the audience a great deal. Basically, the entire show, I spoke to the audience. So I got to know them every day. And we had some interesting folks, people who were eating nachos, texting, things like that. But my favorites were the ones who would talk back to me.
Because you were so close to the stage.
Yes.
To the audience.
Yes. We did become friends. It's true. They probably felt very comfortable with me by the end. And usually these things would happen at the end of the show. But there's, at the very end, 5 minutes before the end, there's this really dramatic monologue. My monologue, where, you know, there are only two people in the show, right? So it's me, Jerusha, and Jervis, okay? And I'm talking about how I love him, and I want to be with him, but I feel like I can't be with him. Just waxing on about him for about 5 minutes, right? And at the very end of the monologue is where I finally let go, and I start crying, and I say, but I miss him, and miss him, and miss him. And some guy in the audience went, miss who?
Oh, God.
Not only have I been talking about this guy for the last 5 minutes, but he's the only other person in the show.
Would you do me a favor and say miss who again?
Why?
Just like the gentleman said it.
Sure. Miss who? Thank you.
Not at all. I don't mean to make you jump through hoops here, but just Miss Who?
Yeah.
The only other guy.
Yeah, it's great.
Good
we just
Lord.
Had to keep going. You know?
What else can you do?
What else can you do? And I'm just crying.
Yeah.
It made me cry more, actually. It helped.
Yes, it was inspiration.
Yeah.
It could have been worse. David told us last week, David Burnham, I think, brought up the Patti LuPone situation in New York when she stopped the show.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah.
Cell phone.
Yeah.
And
no, our friend, when Jim O'Hara, my friend Jim,
was
Parks and
that's
Recreation,
right.
he was at that performance.
And oh yes, that's right. He was at that performance.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be her own photographer. Was that it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was her own photographer.
It was LuPone's.
What? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It was one of her people.
Before Michael tells his, I just want to say that I have a terrible thing that happened to me. I was attending a production of Daddy Long Legs, and I couldn't hear.
Don't eat that.
Michael, sorry.
Well, you know, I was thinking, too, about embarrassing things. And to be very honest with you, I haven't had a lot of them in my life. You know,
We've been very lucky.
But, just one of the stupidest things I ever did was just many, many years ago when I was playing Pippin on Broadway. There's a song called Corner of the Sky that Pippin steps out and sings right away, you know. And it's basically just three verse chorus. It's just A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B. And I'd been doing the show already. I did the show for over 2 years. It was a long run, and I was very bored near the end of my run. I was really, really bored. And this is really about the only thing I can remember doing. It was just stupid. I went out and I sang, you know, everything has its season, everything has its time. Sang the first verse and gotta find my corner of the sky. Second verse comes up, everything has its season, everything has its time. Show me, you know, I sang the first verse and chorus three times. I just repeated. I didn't move on in the song.
And all I can remember
is the cast is like surrounding me, and I'm starting to hear laughter behind me. Like they must have thought I was like drunk or something, or stoned, or
because your mind is going, I think I'll have the wonton soup.
Totally. And I'm thinking, like, I gotta go to Sardi's.
How long into the run was that?
It was probably about, a year and 9 months, year and 10 months into the run. I've been doing the show for a long time.
But what I want to know is, what acting choices did you make
second
and third time?
I didn't make any. It was like I was a zombie.
It was like zombies on
Broadway.
You hit the play button.
Absolutely.
Well, we know that that's not going to happen in Dangerous Beauty, ladies
absolutely
and gentlemen.
Not.
And once again, see these two marvelous performers at the Pasadena Playhouse now in previews and opening February 13th. Running on stage through March 6th.
And a pleasure to meet both of you.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. 100%.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Be sure to join us next week when our guests will include Broadway star Davis Gaines, as well as Broadway TV and film actor Ron Orbach. See you all next week.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.